Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Bob Thibodeau. Welcome to episode number 182 of the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. We are so blessed to have on the line with us Peter Pachter, who is an author, is a retired educator, and he has written a book called Daniel, The Age of Discovery, that I just was so blessed to read, and I want to have him on to talk about his book with you today, because you are going to be blessed by it. Now let's jump into the interview with Peter Pachter. Amen. Now today, I am blessed and privileged to have on the line Peter Pachter, who's an author of a book entitled Daniel, Age of Discovery, and a follow-up book called Daniel, Age of Anxiety, and some other books that we'll talk about probably as well. Peter, welcome to the program today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, man. I just gave our listeners a very brief background on you, Peter. Peter was an educator for 50 years, just recently retired in 2016. You're also a professional storyteller for, 35 years now, something like that?
Something like that. I'm not doing it as often as I used to. Okay. Once in a while I do that.
Hey, man, well, just fill in the blanks for us. Tell us, who is Peter Pachter?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes I ask myself that. Always, I guess, it's part of the search. Now I've got AB and an MA. AB's from Wabash College, master's from Washington University. I've done some postgraduate work, but mostly I'm self-educated. I love to read, I love to learn, and I still continue to do that. Writing these books has caused me to do research, and it's been really exciting doing that because I'm learning, and one thing leads me to the next thing and to the next thing and the next thing. So it's a fascinating process and learning cycle here.
Amen. And we've talked off the air. I have read, folks, this book, Daniel, Age of Discovery, and it was riveting. I mean, I read several books a month, usually 2-3 books a month, and usually I'll read, a couple chapters of one, then go to the next one, and it takes me a month to get through all three. I read this book straight through, without going to another book, because I wanted to see what was going to happen next. I mean, it is really good, Peter, and it's well written, it's riveting, and it leaves you every chapter leaves you wanting to read more to see what else happens. I mean, it's really good, and I highly encourage our listeners to buy it.
I'm really glad you like it. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who read it the second time through. This really impressed me because he found the things that I, as you did, that I thought were important in life lessons. Mm-hmm. And he said, this book needs to be read more than once. Hey. And that was about as high a compliment as I've had. And it's, I feel there's just a lot of meat in there to help people find their way through life.
Amen. Well, that was set, about 1928.
My original intent was to make it one volume and go to the crash of 1929. Mm-hmm. But since that time, the characters have kind of taken over my writing, and it happens. I don't know if any of your other authors have told you that, but for me, it's a strange thing that the characters drive the book, and this has got to happen according to the characters. Yeah. It happens, too, when I'm painting. I paint as well, and I get through my painting session, and I clean up, and I go sit in front of the painting for half an hour to an hour and a half, probably. And it usually tells me what to do next. It's a very unusual process. I think you kind of get maybe divine inspiration from doing it.
Amen. Well, tell us a little bit about the Daniel Age of Discovery. Now, this was a, I don't want to call him a spoiled kid. But, well, that's the word that comes to mind.
Well, maybe he was spoiled. I'm not sure he was spoiled because his parents didn't want him to go to school and didn't allow him to have friends. And they're very, very wealthy, which is true. And they hired governors or governesses for him as he was growing up. And so he became very manipulative. Mm-hmm. And he also became totally self-educated. They have on their estate this huge library tower, 3 stories tall. And in there, he found all his friends through all ages, and it's filled with art as well as books. And that's how he got his education. So when he goes off to school, his father sends him, against his mother's wishes, his father sends him to a boarding school when he's 12 years old. He has absolutely no social skills because he's never had to have them. But he's smarter than everyone there. He knows more than everyone there, including most of the teachers, because he's... But he's not... As you went through the book, didn't you find that he adapts very quickly? He learns very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's his gifted intellect. And I guess it proves the old statement that one person can change the world, and that's pretty much what Daniel does.
Yeah, amen. He changed the entire, basically, operating philosophy of the school there towards the end.
Yes, I have a problem. I, as you said, I've been in education for 50 years, but I have a problem with schools. The way we're teaching kids, I don't think it's very good for the kids. Mm-hmm. It's convenient for the teachers. It's not very convenient for the kids. And so everyone has to go at the same pace. And there are times when a student will ask a question because he's interested in it, and the teacher will say, no, we don't have time to do this.
Yeah.
And for me, that's always been the learning key when someone asks a question about something.
And that's what I love about that book, because Daniel had to learn how to communicate. And just to give the brief intro on the book, when he got dropped off, literally he was dropped off. And he just stood there because he didn't know what to do. And one of the teachers they ended up having a fuss with, came down and says, well, pick up your bag, come inside. He goes, can our servants get it? I had a big laugh over that one. Well, where's the servants? Can't they carry my bags? Oh, why did you write this book? Tell me how you got the idea for it.
Oh, I wanted to write, I've written another book. I think I sent you a copy, Thoughts to Hold On to.
Yeah.
And I wrote that in 1995, but the one that's out now is an expanded edition. It's about twice as big, and it just has thoughts for teenagers to help them resolve issues in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the kids, and I said, the kids today aren't very well grounded, and even our adults into the 30s and 40s, they're not grounded in anything.
That's right.
And it's no wonder, because every time they go online, they get a different story from someone else.
Yeah.
And says, when I grew up in the 50s, that what my parents told me, the houses of worship told me, the schools told me, the movies had the same message. The message was consistent all through my growing up period.
Yeah.
And even, TV, they had the Hayes Commission, which censored everything that came out in movies, for example, TV. But everything was ethically based.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now they don't have that, and they become narcissistic. They don't communicate well face to face because they're always communicating by texting. Mm-hmm. You go to a restaurant, you'll see people sitting there in a group, and they're all texting and not talking to each other.
Exactly.
So
you wrote this book when?
The first one, Age of Anxiety, came out in January of 2016, and there were just things I wanted to teach. And in this book, you saw a lot of life lessons in there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And And I thought people learned better by stories. Of course, Jesus actually thought people learned better by stories.
Yeah, parables.
And I wanted to make it a story, but I didn't want to hit people over the head with things.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I've succeeded in that. Amen. I don't know.
In my opinion, it did. And what's been the response on the Age of Discovery book so far as comments and things like that?
People really like it. If you go to Amazon or the Goodreads, mm-hmm. you'll find a bunch of reviews. Most of them are fives. There's a few fours thrown in there.
Yeah.
And the comments are really good. I have two reviews from, I don't know if they're both online, but two reviews from Goodreads.
Mm-hmm.
One that really pleased me was by a 16-year-old. For young adult reviews, they ask young adults to review them. And it's what really pleased me about this was it was a kind review, but he wrote so very well.
Amen.
That I thought it was just very, very impressive, and it was beyond most 16-year-olds that I've taught in recent years.
Amen. Now, back on the book, it goes from 1928 to 1929, just prior to the crash, correct?
Yeah, the age of discovery covers 4 months from August 1928 to January 1st, 1929.
Okay.
The second book, Age of Anxiety, covers from January 1st to about April of 1929.
Okay.
And my third book, I'll be probably in the summer when I end the third book, and the fourth book looks like it will be the crash.
Wow! I mean, you got this planned out.
Well, it wasn't the way I planned it. As I told you, I started, I thought it was all going to be one volume. But in part, though, I felt like a lot of modern readers to write a book 600-700 pages would discourage people from reading it.
Yeah, it would. You're right, it would. I mean, I got a book the other day that is probably 500 pages, and I'm like, man, when am I going to have time to read this one?
Yeah, well, you have more time left than I do, I think.
Well, my point was, you know, like I said, I could read three, you know, 150, 200-page books and think nothing of it. But set one 500-page book down in front of me and like, man, when am I going to find time to do it? Well, you use real characters in your books. I mean, you know, Herbert Hoover and people like that. So you're using the people of that era as supporting characters for your main character, right?
I am, and it's funny about that, actually. The people that are in my book, and you'll, when you read the second one, you'll see that these real characters become more and more influential and more active in the book. But the people who are in there are people, not only were they active at this time period, but they're people I find very interesting, and most of them, particularly the ones that are active in mm-hmm. my book,
mm-hmm.
Were self-made and are self-educated men.
Mm. Okay.
And I didn't do that intentionally. I was, you know, when I went back to reread it, you know, I noticed this aspect of it.
Amen.
You know, most of your listeners probably don't know a lot of the people in there. Of course, they know Herbert Hoover, who was an orphan and went to live with his uncle. That was the second option that came up. He went to live with his uncle, and he worked in his office. He went to night school, and he definitely was in the first class at Stanford, but he always claimed he was the first person who registered. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But he was self-made. He had nothing.
Yeah.
When he started, he wanted an education. Jesse Livermore, who I find particularly fascinating, I read his book four times the first year, when I first got it, first year.
Wow.
He was the world's greatest stock trader. And in 1907, he made $3 million when the market crashed. And in 1929, he made $100 million. He lost money, made money, cornered the market twice. went bankrupt once. And for him, it wasn't the money as much as it was being right. So when he cornered the market, he was asked, I think it was J.P. Morgan who asked him on behalf of President Wilson, might have been President Wilson, asked him not to take advantage of it and hurt the American economy, which he was glad to do.
Yeah.
And he was an interesting guy. He didn't want to work on his farm. He ran away from home with his mother's help and I think $10 and ended up in front of a brokerage house in Boston.
Yeah. Yeah.
And didn't even know what it was. He saw people going in and out and went in to see what it was all about. One of the workers there said, can I help you? He said, I'd like a job. And they gave him a job of writing stock quotes on the chalkboard because they didn't have any electronic means of doing that other than these boys up there writing. Mm-hmm. And he learned he had a felicity in reading the stock market. And just a really interesting guy, I thought.
Yeah,
and someone I probably wouldn't have come across if I weren't interested in this. And this,
yeah.
And then doing this has caused me to read things I never, ever would have picked up, like the history of banking reform from 1920 to 1929. I never would have read that book if I hadn't been writing. And
I found it pretty interesting.
It was just, it was interesting, and I met some interesting characters like Irving Fisher, who was a celebrity economist in 1929, until he said before the crash, I believe the market has reached a permanently high plateau. And then the market crashed, which hurt his reputation. But he did write a book on crashes and depressions, which wasn't a book, it was more of a dissertation. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty interesting, and I had figured out most of those things that he talks about from my own research, but it was good to read what he said, and he was a major influence for the celebrity economists of our time, which was Milton Friedman. And so it's just interesting how these connections come across and who these people were, and they do the best they can, but they don't necessarily think about.
They're all very well interconnected in the story as well. I mean, it's really good. Now, who is your target? Who should really read your book? Who is it directed to?
Well, my publisher thinks it's young adult, which it certainly is that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's for anyone. If you read the reviews, you'll see that there are many adults who have written in and have said what they did about the book.
Yeah,
they have liked it, and as I told you, I had an interesting conversation with one of my friends the other day about the book.
Amen.
And now, he's not as old as I am, but he's getting up there.
Amen. Now, tell me about the Academic Success Center. What is that?
Oh goodness, I'll tell you. All my kids are adopted. I think you had that information. And my first two were brothers and sisters. We took older kids, my wife and I. And after my divorce, I took older kids still. And my son, Doug, was in the fourth grade and couldn't read at a first grade level.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of problems with school. And that was back in the days when they had open classroom schools. That was the fad. I don't know if you remember those.
Open classroom.
Yeah, they had no walls.
Oh, okay. Outside?
Inside.
Inside. Oh, yeah, I remember what you're talking about. Yeah, I remember
so
that.
I went up to the school board, and I said, look, my son can't function there. And essentially I was told that's too bad. And and he didn't. He failed everything in seventh grade. And then when we moved from Denver to Chattanooga, he was put in a special class for behavior issues. And he made so much progress before the year was over, they put him back in the regular class. He was in eighth grade, and then they promoted him to ninth grade. And I said, if things don't work, if he's going to get through school, he's going to need more help. And I had this idea of a program. So I started this program with Doug and one other student, and built it up to a huge program. And Doug had his best year he'd ever had in the ninth grade. His 10th grade year was better.
Amen.
And his junior and senior year, he was on honor roll.
Amen.
And then he did nothing for 12 years, and he called me up. I'm not exaggerating this. And he called me up and said, "I'm going to go back to school." And I thought, "Oh, sure you are," you know. And I didn't say that, but he did. He got a Pell Grant and went to Faulkner State and got his AA degree, and he graduated magna cum laude.
Amen.
That's really good for a kid who failed everything in seventh grade, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's good for people who haven't failed anything. But
Amen.
Magna cum laude, and he's been working for Camping World for about 10 years, and is really enjoying life, and I'm just really proud of how much he accomplished in his lifetime and how much he overcame. I asked him one time, I said, why did you decide to go back to school?
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, I just hit rock bottom."
Mm.
When he called me, he said, "It's going to take me 2 years, but 2 years of something is better than 12 years of nothing."
Yeah.
And he's got a family, and he's doing really well. I'm amazed. You know, the kids in foster care.
Yeah, right.
They don't have much chance. I don't know if you're aware of all this. I mean, it's really a serious issue.
So is that what the Academic Success Center is directed towards?
No, it's just for kids who are having trouble with school. And what I did with the Academic Success Center, I changed their attitudes and behaviors.
Amen.
And I had kids like Doug. I had one little girl, like sixth grade, I think she was, came in, and her mother said she had, one of her grades, she says she's got a F, but they should be Z's. Well, in a semester, she went from her horrible grades to A's and B's.
Oh, man.
And when they're through, they know that they're doing it because I don't help them. I just guide them, like coaching them when I'm at school. I don't tell them answers. They have to. It's important they understand that they can do it. And, I got a lot of frustration when kids first come. But when they stick with it, they become readers. They learn to like reading, and they do. You know, kids that come.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my chain of thought because my other phone rang. kids that come there, they feel defeated.
Yeah,
and they feel they can't do it. And I'm in favor of telling kids they can do it. And I try to do that. I've tried to do that for 50 years in the classroom. It's very hard. They get such negative self opinions, and they don't have any confidence. And they look over and at the kid next to them. They say, "This kid's really got made. He can do everything. He's really confident." But when you talk to the kids, they have the same type of problems. Everything in high school is a crisis.
Yeah, everything.
You know. And if you remember your high school years, you were probably not very confident.
That's right.
Nor was I.
Yep.
And
that's right.
And so it.
So is this a localized program, or is it grown?
It was localized, and I just stopped when when I moved to. I was doing that in Tennessee, and I stopped doing it as a public service when I was in. Since I moved to Texas, and I've done it at my schools, but I just didn't want to deal with it.
Okay, so the four books you've written, you got the Thoughts to Hold On To, Daniel, Age of Discovery, Daniel, Age of Anxiety. What's the fourth one?
Oh, those were, I wrote a collection of short stories, but it's not available anymore.
Oh, okay, all right.
Okay.
Because I was wondering where that fourth one come in.
Well, I did. I wrote the speech textbook that I used while I was teaching speech, and I had taught some other specialized courses that I wrote the book for.
Amen. Now, you go and talk to, like, student groups or, you know, civic groups, anyone that would like to invite you to come out? You go.
Yeah, I'm willing to do that.
All right. And how, if someone had some questions for you or wanted to invite you out to, you know, speaking to their group or whatever, how can they get in touch with you?
They can contact me through my website.
Okay.
That's Peter Pachtor. The last name is spelled P-A-C-T-O-R at. Oh my gosh.
PeterPachtor.net.
Yeah, .net.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I had to pull it up.
You had that. I gave that to you, and I just couldn't remember because I have like three or four email things. And
right. So yeah. The website is www.peterpachtor, PACTOR.net.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And if they wanted to order your books, they get them through Amazon. Where else can they
get
them? Give them through your website.
They can go. I'm not selling things on my website,
okay.
But they can. They can do it through Friesen Press, FRIESENPress.com. That's my publisher. Okay. They can go to iBooks, anywhere where books are sold online. Amen. Barnes & Noble. If you walked in a Barnes, they're not. I'm not placing them in Barnes & Noble, but if they walked into Barnes & Noble, for example, they can order them.
Yeah.
They can order from them. They can order them from Barnes & Noble online too. The problem with publishing is that if you want to place your books in a bookstore, you have to pay book insurance, return insurance.
Right.
And so it's very pricey. It's per book, not just for all your books.
Okay. All right. Well, Peter, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule and putting the ink pen down. I guess you're using probably a keyboard today, though, instead of an ink pen. But just taking the time to visit with us and tell us about your book. Because as I said at the beginning, I found the Daniel Age of Discovery to be absolutely riveting, well-written. It kept me wanting more to turn the page. I just, you know, I couldn't put it down. And I think our readers will find that, or our listeners will find that as well when they read it. And folks, I highly encourage you to go to Amazon and look for Daniel : Age of Discovery and order it, read it, pass it around to your friends and relatives, let them read it, because there's stories within the story within the story, and it leaves you wanting more. And the next one is out as well, Daniel Age of Anxiety, which I am ordering. And I know this will be another one that, you know, long nights just reading the chapters. Because the first one just, and I told Peter this off of the air, and I'll say it for everyone else. You know, I have probably for the past 30 some years just been a nonfiction reader, just reading true stories and doing research and doing all this stuff that I had to do. And he has, through this book, rekindled the interest in certain fictional books. I'm not going into, you know, Battlestar or whatever, you know, and any of that stuff. I'm not interested in any of that. But, you know, a good family-based fictional book, but yet it's fiction based upon history. And that's what's really neat, because Peter, you wove in all the factual stuff and using real characters from that area into the fictional story to develop your character, and it's just excellent, excellent book. And I just want to thank you for writing it, and I want to thank you for all the years that you were an educator helping our young people, and thank you again for coming on our program.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really glad you enjoyed the book. I hope you'll get in touch with me when you finish the second one.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you if I could do that.
Yes. No, I'd love to hear from you.
Right.
I mean, we've had a couple conversations already before this one.
Yeah.
And it's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Amen. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. For Peter Pachtor and myself, I want to remind you to be blessed in all that you do.